I didn't see the, and now it's recording. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Paige?
Here.
Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda. We have three items. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any members of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item or items in the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. Item A, approval of the September 8th, 2020 City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. Item B, approval of a purchase order contract with Robinson's Landscaping and Nursery of Boyne City to plant 63 trees in an amount not to exceed $24,855 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. And item C, approval of the resolution of support for application to the Charlevoix County Community Foundation for a geographic enrichment cycle grant of $2,500 to install signage in the city on the Boyne Valley Trail and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. Let's see. So, commissioners, is there any discussion?
Or Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move item 3B to new business as 9I.
Will do.
That was 3B?
Okay. Yes, 3B. Okay, any other comments from public or commissioners?
Hi, Sally, I'm disconnecting the phone.
Okay.
With that being said, I would entertain a motion.
Move to approve the consent agenda with item B moved as stated.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Paige?
Sally, are you there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. God.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to item four, hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. Do we have anybody in the audience, Barb?
There aren't any hands up at this time.
Thank you. Moving on to correspondence. Anything there, Mike?
Nothing additional.
Let's move on to your city manager's report, Mike.
All right. Sorry for the extra juggling, and thanks for the reminder on the recording, Dean. City commission update, just to let you know that at the end of the season, a little too late for its actual use, the drinking fountain at the top of Avalanche has finally been repaired. The pump that's down in the water reservoir has been replaced. So that's set for next season. Given the reoccurring problems that we have with that, we're also investigating possibility of a new drinking fountain water bottle filling station that would be located at the warming house for next season as well. At this time, we're currently taking the other drinking fountains around the city down and winterizing them for the winter months. We've also started that work on fire hydrants as well for their winterization. Last Saturday, our fall household collection program went well, and we'll be getting reports from the former American Waste Company on quantities and costs before too long. We'll share that with the commission. Out at the airport, between the airport terminal and Lagoon Access Drive, our DPW personnel blazed a short trail through the woods to give users of the trail and the parking area clear access or more short access to the nearby non-motorized trail. Work on the airport terminal building trailhead it progresses as well. We're waiting for the arrival of election ballots and related materials so we can begin distributing the requested absentee ballots. We expect those items to arrive shortly. Once they do, Cindy and our team have plans in place to get them in the mail promptly, hopefully before the end of next week. Tim is working on the Lake Street Bridge erosion repair design with material suppliers and a bridge engineer on the details in anticipation of work on that yet this fall. And yes, fall officially begins today. So go enjoy the nice fall weather. To help celebrate fall, our Main Street program will be giving away free pumpkins for kids at Country Now and Then this Saturday, the 26th, starting at 10 o'clock. The Friends of the Library will be giving out paint kits for the pumpkins as well. The Tip of the Mitt Watershed Council is planning on holding a virtual public engagement session on Thursday, October 15th at 5:30 p.m. to review their findings and recommendations on a green stormwater infrastructure study. For some reason, green stormwater doesn't sound good. It sounds kind of yucky. Probably should be blue stormwater. But anyway, they got a grant to hire a contractor and work with the cities of East Jordan, Charlevoix, and ourselves on alternate ways to handle some of our stormwater. More information, including a copy of the report, will be made available once we have it. But please mark your calendars. We're currently out for bids on Pine Street, Franklin Park, Morgan Street's storm sewer project, and the Park Street bridge deck waterproofing. That's due on October 21st. These are for 2021 projects, so nothing we're trying to get done yet this fall. Please let Kelsey know if you'd like to be registered for the October 30th at noon announcement of the winners of this year's Great America Main Street Award. Boyne City is one of the 8 national semifinalists for the award and the only one from Michigan to advance this far this year. So if you have any questions on these or other items, please let me know.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioners, any questions for Mike?
No.
Nope.
Okay. Moving on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. In our packet is the August financial statement. Any questions for Cindy?
No.
Okay. Moving on to new business. Item A, a public hearing to close out Michigan Community Development Block Grant consideration. It is 12:18, and at this time I would like to open the public hearing, and we will hear from staff, and then we will hear opportunity from the recipients of this grant, and then we can hear from the any public input, and then we can go through that process. So I'll turn it over to Mike. Or is it Tim?
No, I got it.
Okay.
No, we're very pleased to be able to be at this this point in this project. This has been a very long project for all parties involved. My files on this project start in 2013, and I'm sure that actually predates that by quite some time, especially for the folks out at Boyne Mountain. The project is basically the completion of the upsizing of the Force Main project from Boyne Mountain to where it goes into the business park entrance at Mall Drive. And the most recent section that was done is the completion of the upsizing from the existing 6-inch Force Main to a 10-inch Force Main. And this one is going from Topolinsky Road to the entrance of the business park at Mall Drive. The nice thing about this upsizing, in addition to providing newer pipe and more capacity, is that we really don't lose any of the capacity of the old pipe. Even though the old pipe is valved off and not immediately operating at this point, at any point we could turn that section back on. So we basically now have a new entire route 10-inch force main, and then we also have the backup 6-inch force main that can be operated separately or in tandem with this new line. As I mentioned, this has been a very long project and very difficult at times, and I really have to commend the people from Northern Lakes Economic Alliance that have stuck with this project. We have with us today Jessica from the NLEA, who has really got us over the finish line with lots of meetings with our friends at Boyne Mountain and representatives at the MEDC to try and bring this to fruition. We've gone through three people at the NLEA during the at least 7 years of this project. It started out, as far as I know, with Jan Kellogg with the NLEA, went to Sarah Christensen, and then Jessica picked up and brought us, like I said, across the finish line. So basically, the city's good offices allowed this project to take place as easily as it did. We provided support services with basically Boyne Mountain fronting all the costs to make sure this project took place. So that's a brief summary on it, and I'd let Jessica add whatever she needs to do for the public hearing component of it. She has some cost figures that she could share with you, and then I believe we have Ed Grice here as well too that can talk about the project as well.
Thank you, Mike. Jessica?
Hi, thanks for having me. So, yeah, like Mike said, this has been a long process, but we're excited to see it finish. So the grant was a job creation. So basically we leveraged Boyne Mountain's jobs in order to receive the CDBG funds. Over the reporting period, we recorded over 100 full-time equivalent jobs, which resulted in about $447,000 for this project. The overall total project cost reported was just over $2.6 million. So this is it's a big deal, and it was really exciting to see this finish, and we wish, you know, Boyne Mountain and the city all the best of luck, and that's all I have to report on.
Thank you, Jessica. Ed, are you with us? Would you like to make any comments?
Sure, thanks. And thanks, Jessica. You stuck with this for an awful long time, went through many hoops. You know, the strong infrastructure that we have with the tying this in and the partnership we have with the city, we're about to embark on what we call the Renaissance of Boyne Part 2, our 2030 vision. And many of the things that are on there are, for example, started already remodeling our Edelweiss, the outdoor expansion of the Avalanche Bay Water Park, a sky bridge under design, and many other things that we have on the docket, including replacing every lift that we have here by 2028. And it wouldn't happen without a strong infrastructure, and our partnership with the city has certainly given us that with the sewage system. And also, just part of our 2030 plan is to be carbon neutral by 2030 at the resort, which includes a large solar farm that we're in the process of designing right now. So again, thanks to the folks at the city and the NLEA to help make this all possible. This will be as impactful as the 2030 vision will be as impactful to our whole area as the Mountain Grand and Avalanche Bay was when it was opened in 2005. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Okay, let's, is there anybody from the public that wants to weigh in on this, Barb?
I don't see any hands raised at this time.
Okay. Let's go to board deliberation. Do we need a motion on this, Mike? I don't think we do.
No, there is no motion that's required.
Okay. But I'm still going to give the commissioners a chance to weigh in. Ron, you want to start?
Certainly. I'm just congratulations and go Boyne. It's beautiful what's happened as far as job creation and the attraction that Boyne Mountain brings to this area. So good luck and keep going.
Thanks, Ron. Dean?
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to finally bring this across the finish line. It's sort of a no-brainer for a project, and the impact, as Ed described and others, is significant and will help us continue to create new jobs in this region.
Sally?
Yes, I echo everyone's sentiments. It's been a long time coming and nice to have it done, and Boyne Mountain is a great place.
You?
Ed, as you look forward with this 2030 plan, are there other opportunities the city can partner with Boyne Mountain, or do you see that relationship working together as the plan gets implemented?
Yeah, you know, one of the things, Hugh, that we're going to do over the next several weeks and couple months, we're a little bit delayed because we intended to do this in the early summer, but we're going to have a launching meeting with all the stakeholders, including our partners at the city, business people, and our guests as well, but launching this vision plan for 2030. And, you know, just like the bike path, I'm totally amazed at how busy this thing is. And, you know, there's probably opportunities like that in the future, but that has been a huge success.
That's all. Thank you.
Ed, I'd like to just echo my fellow commissioners that, and it's refreshing that we have a positive working relationship and hopefully for many years to come. So we appreciate it. You are a big part of making Boyne City being successful. So thank you very much.
And we wouldn't be a success without the local community, including our friends in Boyne Valley Township. People come here for the area, not just here. And we recognize that and we embrace it.
All right, anybody else, any closing comments? Staff?
When you're ready, Tom, you'll need to close the public hearing.
Okay. It is 12:28 and I will close the public hearing.
Jessica, anything else you need from us?
Not at this time.
All right. Well, thank you for all your efforts.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Great job. Let's move on to item 9B, East Lincoln Street reconstruction. Let's see here.
This will be Tim.
Yep. Tim.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. As the commission is aware, each year we begin preparations now on the designs that are required to be completed for next year's construction program. Mark Fowler and I met a couple weeks ago and talked about the next 2 years worth of projects, major projects, and the two reconstructions that are on our list are Court Street from Charlevoix to Lynn Street, and then Lincoln Street from South Lake to Earl Street. Given a number of reasons, we would recommend swapping those years and doing Lincoln Street ahead of Court Street. And the primary reasons are that Lincoln carries a lot more traffic than Court Street certainly does. It serves as a local connector east-west across the community. Lincoln Street also has some transite water mains that may have some lead goosenecks on those service lines, which we all know is a priority for the state on replacement. And then third, Lincoln Street suffers from some serious flooding during rain events. That has become more prevalent in the last year, where we've received a number of complaints from homeowners along that stretch of Lincoln Street. And addressing the flooding there is definitely of a major concern. So we had a meeting. Mike and Mark and myself met with C2AE to go over really kind of the scope of this project, which I think if you flip to the drawing that's attached to the packet, you can see it involves the road reconstruction all the way from South Lake easterly to, let's say, a little past Grant Street, and then utility reconstruction of those water mains where they need to be replaced, the sewer lines, again, where those need to be replaced or extended, and then the installation of some storm drainage infrastructure to take the drainage away. So we talked with C2AE about that, and we're trying to stretch this project as far east as possible so that we can pick up as many benefiting properties and as many of the drainage and other related kind of issues with Lincoln Street. So while the original limits a year ago ended at East Street, the majority of our complaints are between East and Grant on flooding. So I extended it and added a little bit more money to the capital improvement plan last year to take it to Grant. And what that means for practical purposes is you go a little bit past Grant to the bottom of the hill, and that would afford us to at least extend the utilities to beyond the east side of Grant and to position ourselves to further extend those to the east along Lincoln and then up Earl Street, up Alice Street, possibly up Lewis and down High Street as well. So kind of the second phase of this project will come back to the commission at a later date, and that will be evaluating the entire service area that's shown in the dashed green line, kind of from South Main to Division and from Grant over to Lewis, to see how in the future we would service those areas for water, sewer, and storm water. And we would really undertake that effort well, just kind of after we get a little bit of preliminary engineering work done on the Lincoln Street project itself. So understanding that, we asked for a proposal from C2AE, the city's consulting engineer, to come up with the design and look at two alternatives on the storm design. That would be to do traditional concrete curb and gutter with an asphalt pavement cross section, and then replacing and upgrading the utilities, as I mentioned. And secondly, looking at an option similar to what we did on Terrace and Cedar, where we used drainage swales and underground kind of storm retention in order to deal with some of the drainage issues. The subtle difference being we wouldn't look at doing curbing, at least concrete curbing, along that section in that second alternative. So we'll look at those two alternatives going forward. The plan would be to get the design work done, you know, starting in the coming weeks with all the field topographic survey work, and then doing some of that preliminary and then the final engineering over the winter time, so that we'd be in a position to bid this project in March of next year, so that we could theoretically be constructing it as soon as the frost laws are off the road in mid-April to late April. The cost of the services would be $38,300. That includes some of the soils engineering work that's required, and we would propose to split that 50-50 between the streets fund, and that'd be the local streets budget, and the water wastewater fund. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tim. Do we have any comments from fellow staff, department heads, or from the public?
No public comment at this time.
Okay. Okay, let's move on to board deliberation. Dean, you want to start?
Yeah, I just had a couple of small questions. One of them is, we're doing the engineering now for this project, but it wouldn't obligate us, I assume, to follow through on this next year if we were to run into some unexpected fiscal challenges because of the current state's economic situation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The second thing is that I assume, you sort of implied it, but I assume that the difference between the curb and gutter and the swale is that with the swales, we are able to gain a little bit of water quality benefit from capturing the water before it goes into a storm drain. Is that right too?
Yeah, it's probably more about the quantity as you know, instead of the quality. What the swale does is it retards the flow and slows it down from, you know, being absorbed and running off into the storm sewers. There still are storm sewers in this design. They just function a little bit differently than water running quickly off of the pavement into catch basins and into the storm.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Sally? Sally, can you hear me?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know which of them would be the best way to go, but I know that Tim would act. Whatever he says, I think, would be good.
Okay, thank you. Hugh?
Tim, is the long-range plan to do Lincoln all the way to Boyne Avenue?
Yes, that section of pavement and utilities, as I mentioned, most of that area is not serviced, at least with sanitary sewers, it's not serviced and there's no storm sewers. So eventually taking it out to M75 Boyne Avenue and then down High Street and then also up Earl and up Alice and Lewiston or Lewis are all definitely required. And we'll have a better sense of what that looks like after we get the preliminary engineering done and see how far we would be able to extend the utilities under this first phase.
Could you describe the flooding issues or water issues that occur with heavy rains? I'm not real familiar with that.
Yeah, there are a number of, it's actually a fairly hilly section between what I'd say is kind of the top of the easterly point at Earl Street. Then you just got a series of little rolling hills between there and South Lake, and in between each one of those intersections, a lot of water accumulates during a rain event because there's just no place for it to go. There's no storm sewers in the area. So, you know, I've personally measured water depths of about 2 feet in depth between Grant and East Street along Lincoln, and that floods into the neighbors' adjacent properties and down the public alley and in behind the houses that front on Grant Street and on East Street, north of Lincoln. And I've had a number of complaints from the residents in the area in the past 18 months regarding drainage in that area.
I know a few people who live along that stretch of Lincoln, and spoke of some concerns about how the traffic flows there, and, you know, concern with kids. And is there any way during this project to kind of look at just, you know, things to make it a little bit more safe as it picks up more traffic and that type of thing as the community is growing?
Yeah, I don't see any reason that we can't certainly do that.
Would it be possible to include the neighbors in a meeting, just a planning meeting, to hear what they have to say and some suggestions they may have, that type of thing?
Yeah, I would think we could do that, or even, you know, possibly just do a survey or something like that to get their input.
That's all I have, Mayor.
Thank you, Hugh. Ron?
Well, I got a question about Earl Street. Does that have currently have water and sewer?
I defer to Mark. You can see from the drawing, but maybe Mark could explain what's going on with the utilities here.
Are you there, Mark?
Yeah, I had to unmute, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, on Earl Street, the water main goes up Earl Street just a little bit past Cindy's, probably halfway, a couple houses past Cindy's is water. It doesn't have it all the way to the end. And yeah, and then the sewer stops over at Grant Street. There's no sewer in that area. Everybody's on septic tanks until you get to about halfway down High Street, and then it picks up sewer again.
So with this proposal here, would that how would that fall into the future plans of the Housing Commission and the Senior Center campus there, future community? Would that bring water? Would that bring sewer to it?
I guess is that going to be somewhere off of Morgan here? Somewhere, I guess I'm not sure where that is, but yeah, we would like to bring water and sewer down Earl all the way. And then there had been times, I guess, in the past where they talked about either Earl going all the way to Division or looping across to Alice and possibly Franklin so that you would have a loop there. It wouldn't be just all dead ends.
Okay. That's the only thing I had.
Thank you, Ron. Well, this is my neighborhood, so I'm welcoming the change. It's needed. I can agree with Tim that it's 1 to 2 feet deep after a big downpour. Unfortunately, I have two new homes up on Earl that had to drill their own well. We're a little too late, but that's past history. But I'm in full favor of this, and it is needed. So, with that being said, let's see here. I would entertain a motion from my commissioners.
I'll make a motion that we City Commission award a contract for engineering design services for East Lincoln Street reconstruction project in the amount not to exceed $38,300 per the proposal dated 9/16/2020. Further, I recommend the city manager execute the documents.
Thank you, Ron.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Brunch.
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page? Page?
Sally, can you hear us? I think we need to wait for that to happen because we're in the middle of a roll call.
Yeah, I don't believe she's set to be able to unmute herself.
Does Barb need to unmute her, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't think she's set as a host.
Okay, aye.
Thanks. Solomon?
Yay.
Conklin? Motion carried. Oh, Hugh's muted as well.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carried.
Thank you. Good job. Let's move on to item C, Ridge Run Dog Turf Purchase Recommendation. Tim?
Again, thank you, Mayor. We have been working since well over 12 months now on the agility area at the Ridge Run Dog Park. The commission might recall that last year after Michelle Carter, who's the leader of the dog park user group, had successfully solicited a donation of $10,000 to pay for fencing at the proposed agility dog area. We started moving forward with that project. However, the poor weather last fall prevented us from doing the grading and excavation work, unfortunately. So the installation of the fence didn't happen last year, and it was deferred until this spring and summer. However, then COVID showed up, unfortunately, and further kind of delayed our work on the project, as really it wasn't defined as essential work until sometime well into May. As soon as that freed up, we were able to get in and grade the agility area and finish the cleanup of the area around it. That work is all done. We still need to put some fabric down and then put stone on top of the fabric. And the plan was to put turf on top of that stone. And that would provide for a good stable surface and a comfortable surface for the dogs to perform their agility runs on. So Michelle had worked very hard during the past 12 plus months to secure the turf from a project that was happening in Traverse City. And this would be turf that's pulled off an athletic field and then recycled for use at a dog park. And this is a common practice throughout all of North America. The unfortunate thing was the contractor that was going to supply that turf did not get the work. So by the time we had reached out to the folks in Traverse City to find out whether the turf was still available, it was already gone because this COVID pandemic has created a real shortage of turf nationwide. So the stuff is in very high demand right now and hard to get any used turf at a reasonable price. So alternatively, Michelle's been working on getting some other quotes from suppliers. And I listed three different quotes here in the write-up. Two are from the same company, but sourcing it from two different warehouses where it's being stored. The one is in Schwartz Creek, Michigan, and you can see that price was the lowest cost. The second source house from Artificial Grass Recyclers was in Onarga, Illinois, kind of outside of the Chicago area. That's the middle price. And then there was some additional turf in Georgia that that Michelle was able to get pricing on. Now, the issue with the turf that's in Michigan is it's two different types of turf, if you will. The one type of turf has sand that's mixed into the artificial turf. Again, that's a common thing on athletic fields. And then some of the turf at that site also does not have sand in it. I feel that that's going to create a problem for us if we try to mix the two types of turf over one common area. That's going to create issues not just with installation, but also some issues with longer term maintenance. Michelle has had the opportunity to look at that turf, and it's just not the ideal situation for us to be making an investment in that product, in my opinion. The turf that's in Onarga, Illinois is from the Merrillville High School in the Chicago suburbs. It's going to be all consistent and be of a better quality for the dog park if the commission wants to move forward with this. Michelle came and gave a good update to the Parks and Recreation Commission last week at its meeting. And the commission asked for my advice, I guess, and I recommended that the Parks and Rec Commission, and I'm recommending the same thing to you now, help with funding the purchase of this artificial turf so we can complete the project. There's a couple things at work. One, the site's graded. The site is the site needs to be finished, and we need to ideally put down long-term what needs to be in that kind of multi-layer cake, if you will, out there that makes up the finished agility area. We don't want to put something down temporarily to bridge us until a point in time next year or in the future. That would then cause us a lot of work and potentially some additional cost to try to deconstruct it so we can build it properly a second time. So my recommendation is that because we expect to be under budget on a number of the parks' capital budget items this year, I'd recommend that we use some of that park's capital budget funding in order to purchase this turf and get the project finished. The last thing I guess I'd note is that not only is this project, you know, held up because of our difficulty in getting the turf, which was, was scheduled to happen, you know, much earlier this year, unfortunately. We have another grant that is for a storage shed through the Community Foundation that project needs to be completed still before December. And to make all these pieces fit together and get the rest of the cake, if you will, layered up, get the turf acquired, get it here from Illinois, get it installed, get the shed built and put up, and then get the fencing all done before the snow flies. I'm saying kind of late November, but we know it can happen earlier than that. We need to, you know, take some action now. I did provide kind of a detailed breakdown on where some of the, you know, cost savings would come in the capital budget. But I do feel that we need to move forward with this so that we're not incurring more cost or potentially, you know, other delays and uncertainty that would follow maybe with Michelle's ability to raise funds in the future to have the users pay for this project. So my recommendation would be that we purchase the turf from the Ornarga, Illinois warehouse from Artificial Grass Recyclers in an amount not to exceed the $6,508. And that includes an allowance for $1,900 of trucking that would be charged to a separate logistics company who would ship it here. The stuff is very heavy, and these are big rolls of AstroTurf. So that would be my recommendation. And I think Michelle was trying to join the Zoom meeting. If you have any questions for myself or for Michelle, or if Michelle wants to make any comments, obviously she'd be open to do that as well.
Thank you, Tim.
I'm here. I don't know if I'm unmuted.
Yes, Michelle, welcome. Go ahead.
No, I'm just here to support, the motion for this. It's been a lot of work to get it to this point. And yeah, it was very unfortunate that we lost that donation. So, and with this gentleman who donated that substantial amount of money, you know, he's in touch with me about every 2 days asking me what is the status of the project and, you know, what's happening next. I still feel that he may be somebody that would continue to support us, you know, with some financial donations, but I can't move forward and ask for anything more until we show that, you know, something is being done with his generous contribution from last year.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else, Barb, from staff and or the public that wants to speak on this topic?
I don't see any hands raised from the public.
Okay. Let's go to commission. Let's see here. Sally, want to start with you?
It looks good to me. It's how much more beyond that 100 by 100 area will there be, or is it just at that point the restrooms and that sort of thing?
Yeah, the the 100 by 100 area includes the area where the shed would sit. It does not include anything where the restrooms could potentially be located in the future if those are constructed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm good with it.
Thanks, Sally. Hugh?
Mike, this is a question for you. With this further investment in the dog park, does it have any impact on the city property there that we've talked about before as a place for possible housing?
You're muted, Mike.
Yep, I know. I have to get to the right screen here. On the map that you have in front of you, the area south of the agility area that we've talked about, where it's showing restrooms, the restrooms themselves would potentially conflict with a with possibly dividing those off into lots that would front onto whatever that street is to the south of there. So.
Silver?
Court Street.
No, that's not Silver. Silver is one block south of that.
Yeah, Court. I'm sorry, Court. Yeah. Ron's backyard.
Yeah, that street below there backs up to Ron's backyard.
The other thing is, I think Michelle has done a great job, and she just keeps pushing this forward. And, you know, there hasn't been, the city has contributed a lot in manpower and those types of things. But I think this is very appropriate for us to invest in this park and help move it along and keep it going strong. So I support this.
Thanks, you. Ron?
I support the proposal also. And
Dean?
Yeah, I think this is fine to complete the layering of the cake, as Tim said. I just had two real quick questions. One of them was, what's the life cycle of this turf? Does it last like years and years and years, or is this something that would likely be a recurring expense after a few?
I think I might defer that one to Michelle, because she's been talking with the suppliers and some of the other dog park owners on how long this turf lasts.
You know, I don't have an exact time frame, but what I can say is this is a very common thing for people to recycle the turf. So it comes off of like high school fields and that, and almost everybody that I talk to says that it's incredible how quickly they turn it over. But, and that's heavy wear and tear with football players, teams, soccer players, whatever. With the dogs, the traffic and the amount of activity and the durability, like, I can't imagine that this is something that would have to be replaced in a few years. I mean, I can certainly ask that question and get it back. But, in looking at a lot of this turf myself that was recycled, it's in amazingly good shape. Now, the only thing that I will say with using the recycled material is it may not all be a solid green surface. There will be areas that there might be some striping from sidelines or, areas that have been white lined, but I don't feel like that should be an issue at all, for the dogs or for the people using it. But I think the wear and tear, we should get a substantial amount of years out of it.
Great, thank you. The second question was, what's left on this project? I see the restrooms for sure, but on this diagram that we see here, what is left to be added to or completed?
As far as the whole, like from day one master idea?
Yeah, the whole master plan, yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the dog park or the agility park, we had looked at hopefully paving, a parking lot or parking area. And then also ultimately, I looked at the area, which I know is under consideration now for housing to be built. But we had looked at grassing all of that, putting in picnic table, maybe barbecue areas, because originally, that whole area was going to be developed as just a complete park. So a little bit of something, for everybody. But at least getting to the point of the agility park and then a restroom, other than the porta potty, And then just continuing to further improve, you know, what we have and maintaining and taking care of it.
And just a comment, you know, that we talked about that area where the Fruits of restrooms are as being potentially a buildable lot for housing. And one alternative way to think of it is if that could be dual purpose, not only for a dog park, but as Michelle talked about with picnic tables and other amenities, perhaps having that be an amenity, carving that out as an amenity that would be available to residents, current residents in that area, and also to new lots might be another way of thinking about completing this project while making it a desirable thing for future housing in that area.
Right. I mean, it's the dog park just continues to get more and more and more popular. You know, I know this was one of the things in the early stages that Tom had concerns about. It's like, okay, are we going to get this thing up and running? And then is it going to just, nobody's going to take care of it? Or, you know, am I going to fall off from being a manager of the user group? And I've just remained committed to this whole dog park, the area, and wanting to develop this agility park for not only for our local community, but also look to bring people in and make this somewhat of a revenue generating as well, like having tournaments that could bring, you know, more people into the area and further revenues that would help offset some of the costs, you know, for the dog park so that we can continue to maybe get grass seed put in or, you know, some of the other things that were all part of that original concept.
Thank you, Dean. My compliments to Michelle for being relentless on this and seeing the vision, and this has become an asset to Boyne City. People come to Boyne City just for the dog park, and the place is hugely popular, and it's a social event for the humans as well as the dogs. And my compliments to Tim for following through and seeing this project to the end. I'm in full support.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, can I ask one more question?
Sure.
With the growth in that type of thing, is the neighborhood happy? I mean, have there been any complaints from neighbors about the park or anything like that?
I have not received any.
Mm-hmm. I have not received any. You know, there were, you know, we put it to public comment years ago when we first started it, and there were a couple of residents that were worried about barking dogs, or really primarily just that was the only concern. And I've had no complaints or nothing that's come back to me.
I remember how divisive this issue was when it first came before commission about whether we should go forward with it. I think it was a split vote at the commission at that time. And since then, we've had very, very few negative comments with regards to it. Kind of as Michelle says, it's been very well received. For the entire region, it's looked on kind of as a model of the ways to do things. So unless some other department head, whether Kevin or somebody else knows of any other complaints, I'm not aware of any.
Mike, I can't think of any complaints we've received up to the dog park.
I know, Hugh, that some neighbors, that was their daily routine to go to the dog park to socialize and watch the dogs, and they weren't even dog owners. So that was pretty cool.
Thank you.
Okay, looking for a motion, commissioners.
Okay. Who started? I would move to approve a purchase order contract for the purchase of dog park turf with artificial grass cyclers in an amount not to exceed 6508, which includes a $1,900 trucking expense charged by a separate logistics company contracted with artificial grass cycle. Further, I would recommend the city manager execute the document.
I got that, Sally, but just barely. Your voice is very light.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Thank you, Sally.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Ron. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Meadhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Yay. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Michelle. Let's move on to item D, John Street Erosion Control Project Recommendation. Tim?
Again, thank you, Mayor. We've been working with Armstrong Environmental, Wendy Armstrong, our shoreline specialist, and C2AE, our consulting engineers, on those four highest priority locations for a number of months now. We've submitted permits for the John Street Road End Project to the Army Corps, to Eagle, and to the Charlevoix County Building Department, who are responsible for the erosion control permit. And those are all in process. The state is comfortable with us proceeding on the project because they know that we'll follow through on the permits and make sure that everything gets installed in accordance with the drawings. The strategy for repairing the road end park at the end of John Street is to install 1 to 3 foot diameter limestone riprap boulders over top of a peystone layer, over top of some fill and a geotextile fabric. This system will be similar to what's being installed for both the Spring Arbor condos and the Maple Shore Association, which flank the two sides of John Street. This photograph shows you the status of the erosion as of a couple weeks ago. You can see the storm sewer at the top sticking out into Lake Charlevoix, and probably about 20 feet or so of shoreline that's been eroded away there. So we would replace that as I had described. And I solicited four prices and got three back from contractors for this work. One company, R&B Excavating, said they were too busy to quote any work in 2020. They're taking orders for work starting in April of 2021 right now, so they're so backed up. But we did get three prices. Hilltop Excavating is the company that's been hired by the two condo associations. They would have been the natural to use on this since they're working in our space. And we'll be probably starting their project. Well, they've started their project, I should say. They've at least mobilized some of the material to the site and plan to begin the work very soon. Unfortunately, their price didn't come in as good as Harbor Springs Excavating. And the city has some experience with Harbor Springs Excavating, and Wendy Armstrong and C2AE both also have experience with this company. Wendy's worked on a number of shoreline projects, in particular with Harbor Springs this year, and indicated that those have been all favorable. Each proposal has some slight variation in them because there's a little bit of latitude for the contractors to price the work a little bit differently, but they're all basically the same type of construction. One of the proposals, the one from Bowman, which was the most expensive, did include a set of stairs. They would be made out of concrete and they would go down to the water. Wendy was recommending, or maybe not recommending, just advising that that was going to, you know, probably create a future erosion issue for us if we put solid stairs into what otherwise is kind of an open draining boulder wall. The stairs, you know, the stairs cause erosion in essence because it's a hard surface that doesn't allow the water to properly drain when the waves are receding back away from the stone. So at this time, we're looking at doing stairs, possibly. That was a request from Mr. Brady, if you recall, from the public meeting back in June on this. When we were talking about the design alternatives, we're looking to do stairs still. It's probable that those stairs would be some kind of aluminum or wood stair that would be attached over top of the rock. So the pricing above does not reflect any stairs in the price, but the stairs can be added at a later date without any significant additional cost with otherwise doing them right now. So we need to get that shore protected, and I'd recommend that we hire Harbor Springs Excavating to do that work for an amount of $25,200.
Thank you, Tim. Barb, do we have anybody else from the public and or department heads or other staff members that want to weigh in on this?
I don't see any hands up at this time.
Thank you. Any other staff members? All right, let's go to you want to start? We'll go to board deliberation.
Sure. Tim, I think it's really important to have steps sometime in the near future. I understand not doing it right now, but you know, it is a public access, and it looks like the stones are going to be, what, 5 feet tall? I mean, is the shore going to be like that tall?
Yeah, so it'll be between 4 to 6 feet in height. There weren't stairs there previously, but I think you were able, you know, I didn't see it because it would kind of predates my time here, but I presume you were able to kind of crawl down the bank somehow to get to the water. The main use that I've been told that the people use this access for is to launch and to pull up boat lifts. And I think they've launched some boats there in the past, but probably not of late. So that they can get them into the water and then drag them down to their home or their condominium. So the stairs is going to be a complicated thing because you have to design the bottom of the stairs for some kind of elevation of the water level. And as the water level goes up and down, that varies. But C2AE is looking at some alternatives that might be able to be flexible, and then have a set of stairs that we could remove and possibly pull up on the shore during the winter time so that the ice doesn't tear them apart.
Thank you.
Thanks, you. Ron?
I'm good with the proposal.
Okay. Dean?
Yeah, I'm good with it as well. I think this is fine. I did notice Glenwood Park, near Glenwood Beach, the little township park there, that they have a step system kind of similar that kind of goes over the edge and down. Looks like that's permanent, but I guess I'm not sure. But I think that might be what Tim was referring to, something like that for that spot. The only other question I had is not related to this specifically, but related to erosion issues. I saw some statement by the Corps of Engineers saying that even though water levels are down slightly from their high, they still are cautioning that there could be significant shoreline damage this winter because the lake levels are still high. I'm wondering, Tim, what thought there's been to trying to do something to at least marginally stabilize the other priority areas if we're not able to do anything more permanent yet this fall to prevent worse problems come next year.
Yeah, our strategy at this point is as soon as we can kind of get these ones moving, then we'll work on obviously Lake Street, which is still maybe our main priority other than John, but to look at the Tannery Beach area and try to get that sandbagged for the winter time, and then next spring we'll probably look at doing some kind of shoreline project at Tannery.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Sally?
Yeah, I'm good with the project.
Okay. I'm in full support too. And we'll look for a motion.
Would move the City Commission approve a purchase order contract with Harbor Springs Excavating of Harbor Springs in an amount not to exceed $25,200 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Cindy. Let's move on to Public Works Gate Relocation Recommendation. Tim, we're keeping you busy today.
Yeah, lots of items, lots of variety today. Again, thank you, Mayor. I made a number of observations over the past year and a half around our facility, around the community as a whole. But, you know, you're driving in and out of the facility, you know, several times a day and just looking at kind of what's going on and how people are using it, including the public. And we really have, we have very minimal approach when it comes to security at the current facility. The existing gate really only kind of protects the area where you enter the main garage and our salt storage area, kind of on the north side of the main Public Works garage building. It does not restrict access, especially during, you know, the evening hours, the dark hours, if you will, to anyone driving into the site and doing whatever they want to do. We have had a number of instances, and it seems to be of kind of increasing frequency. I counted 8 so far this year where people have illegally dumped, let me put it this way, people have dumped material that's not appropriate for the North Boyne compost site within our gates. We have followed up on most of those with the police department by, you know, investigating, reviewing the video camera footage and trying to determine, you know, which vehicle and what color is it, et cetera, to try to figure out, you know, who dumped the material. And there's just a few pictures here on the screen that show some flagstone and concrete debris that was dumped, some wood debris. Probably the most interesting thing, a 8-foot-long plastic paddle boat was dumped in the wood debris area, in the brush debris area. There's been lots of tires and chunks of steel and old pipes and things like that that get thrown into our brush area. And if we don't catch it right away down the road, what's going to happen is we'll go and rent, you know, a brush grinding equipment from somebody with the provision that if anything happens to that equipment while we're using it, we're going to have to pay for the repairs. And this material could end up in that brush grinder and cause us some really big cost. That's, you know, really kind of the main concern. We also have some dumpsters that sit outside the building, which I think the photograph that shows the gates also depicts those dumpsters. They're there on the left-hand side. There's been a number of people that have came and dumped their own, you know, household or condominium trash in these dumpsters and caused problems for us operationally where we've had to pay for additional collections by GFL, the former American Waste Company. And we've had to pay for additional collections. We've had drivers from their company refuse to pick up our dumpsters because they're overflowing with trash. And it just makes the area look unsightly and is just not a good kind of public facing image for the Public Works facility. So I've looked at a couple different options to relocate the existing gate. One would be to relocate it to the very south end of the site where Robinson and Court Street meet. And that would provide, you know, the best security to the entire site. But it also comes at a much higher cost because electrical needs to be run out there for the gate and a lot of additional fencing would be required to really secure the site properly. I think by relocating the gate to the location that's shown on this drawing, in essence, kind of right in front of my office there, We would be able to add a little bit of material to the existing gate, add a little bit of additional fencing, and just kind of reroute the current electrical from the left side of that photograph over to the new location and be able to get the gate operational. It would then give us some flexibility to start controlling the hours of operation at the site and provide for generally a more secure facility. As you know, the cold storage building, which also sits on the left side of that sketch, also has a number of doors. It has 5 doors in the facility. Those doors are secured only by a video camera at this point. So, you know, having a gate that's locked during the night or closed during the night would, again, further kind of protect the assets that are being stored in cold storage for the city. So, with that, my recommendation is that we relocate the gate this year, and then kind of between now and the time that the budget deliberations start, we maybe do a work session where we talk about how we would operate the North Boyne site in the future, including potentially restricting some of the hours, and you know, have an examination of the charges for the expenses that we incur for the brush grinding and how we manage the users that actually use the North Boyne site. So I had Harbor Fence Company, who installed the original gate, give us a price on relocating it. Pretty much all of the existing infrastructure can be reused, and the cost to move it would be about $3,600. And we have funds in the motor pool to cover that expense. So I'd recommend that we go forward and at least relocate the gate now. What it would allow us to do in the short term, I guess, would be to, you know, begin at least having the gate closed on a timer during the kind of non-daylight hours, if you will. And that's when much of the illegal material ends up there. And then it would just be open during the day like it is today. It'd be no different for anybody that legitimately is using our facility up there for brush or leaf and grass disposal. So that would be my recommendation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tim. Is there any public input? Is there any other department heads or staff that would like to weigh in on this?
No hands up at this time.
Thank you. All right. We'll go to board deliberation. Ron, back to you.
Well, I support this recommendation. I walk over there quite a bit myself, and I talk about people coming in later. I see some pretty big loads come in there, and I just wonder, you know, if they have a contract with us for dumping there. So I think this is a good start as far as in the future getting people used to the possibility of limited hours. So I support what Tim's proposing, and I thank him for his diligence. So
thanks, Ron. Dean?
Yeah, I was curious, Tim, with the gate in a new location, what would prevent an individual, if they're going to dump illegally, from just driving around the fence, or the gate, rather?
Yeah, there's an existing ditch there, and we'll probably install a couple of wooden posts outside of the gate line on either side of the ditch, so that if somebody really wanted to take a shot at driving through the ditch to get in, they wouldn't be able to do that.
Great. I support the idea of a broader discussion about that site as you proposed to Tim. You know, it's not just hours of operation security, but some of the things you brought up before about the volume of material that we receive there and the sustainability of being able to process and allow to decompose some of that material and finding a way or markets or individuals who would be willing to use that product afterwards. So I think that doing that before budget time would be a good thing for us to do.
Thank you, Dean. Sally?
Yeah, I'm good with it, and I agree that we should have more discussion about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hugh?
Yeah, I appreciate what you're doing here, Tim. The only thing is, in your oral report there, you talked about to secure it properly, and that would be to do it out at Robinson and without the intersection. I'm not clear of the road. So how much more would that cost?
Yeah, it would probably be, just ballparking it. You're probably talking another $10,000 in fencing to fence that whole south face to limit access. The reality is the only thing that's exposed here is the entrance door to the facility and then the exit door from the garage. And those are both pretty well secured and they're both camera covered by our security system. The advantage also, and I guess I failed to mention this, the advantage of putting the gate up by the main office is that if somebody pulls in and they realize the facility is closed after hours, that they would be able to turn around pretty easily in the parking lot and just drive on. If we put it at down at the intersection of Court and Robinson Street, it might end up, having them have to back up or something like that. So this might be a little bit better location to allow for that traffic to kind of turn around.
So as we go through this process that you recommend we do a work session to talk about how the area is used, you don't anticipate us having to consider moving that gate?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'm in full support. Would entertain a motion.
I move to approve a contract for Public Works gate relocation with Harbor Fence Company of Petoskey, Michigan, in an amount not to exceed $3,578, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
I would second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Let's go on to item F, patio furniture. You, Mike?
I have to keep reminding myself to unmute myself. Attached for the commission's review and consideration is a quote to provide furnishings for the city's facilities second floor outdoor patio area. The quotation is from Landscape Forms out of Kalamazoo. They are the firm that has supplied the vast majority of our streetscape furnishing that we have around the city. These furnishings have held up very well over the years and are made in Michigan. In researching this matter, Landscape Forms was the only firm that we could find that was able to provide us these design services as well at no additional cost. They also has a local representative that we worked with on this project, Mr. Rick Yarling. They've also introduced us to a purchasing cooperative that is saving us approximately 12% on this and future products, not just from them, but from other furnishing providers as well. To try and come up with a cost comparison and make sure that their prices were fair, I checked with several other vendors online, such as Belson Outdoors, to see if I could come up with something comparable. And from each of the vendors, I could find a piece or two of it, but I wasn't able to find a whole suite similar from Landscape Forms. The base pricing that I found from these pieces was very comparable to that of Landscape Forms. But again, we've had existing relationships with them and we know the quality of their products, where the other items are pretty much unknown. As a result of these efforts, I came away even more convinced that the overall package from Landscape Forums is a good value for the city. The proposed furnishing layout and the pictures of the specific items are attached. They have all been reviewed and supported by staff here at the city offices. Because of the heavy-duty nature of these furnishings, once they're placed on the patio, they'll remain there year-round. This isn't stuff that you can fold up and put away or something of that nature. The only exception to that would be the umbrellas, which could come inside during bad weather and during the off-seasons, like the winter and stuff. The furnishings are designed for both meeting and event use, and the tables can be moved around and reconfigured depending upon the use. The tables are accessible in design, so if we had a group meeting out there or somebody had an event and you had somebody that was in a wheelchair per se, the group tables would accommodate that. A sample of one of the chairs, the Verona chairs with arms, has been in and remains available for inspection at the in our lobby here. Funds for the purchase for the purchase would come from our remaining bond proceeds, which can only be used for this building, its grounds, and furnishings. In addition to the items under the quotation for the patio, I'd further recommend that the City Commission add two additional 72-inch long black Scarborough benches to this order. One could be placed in the grass area between the LaFrance fire truck and the sidewalk on North Lake Street, while the other one could be placed adjacent to the sidewalk by our main entrance to this building. These would give visitors to the building and people that are passing by places to stop, rest, and or reflect if they wished. The cost for those two benches is $1,266 each plus the shipping. Since the items are made to order for delivery, the whole package can be delivered in about 7 to 9 weeks. Some of the furnishings could be here in as soon as 5 weeks. It's my recommendation that the City Commission approve the purchase of patio and outdoor furnishings from Landscape Forums of Kalamazoo as proposed for $35,082 plus shipping for the additional two benches. And one of the benches is shown right there at the top of the screen right now. That one table, E1, would be the one that'd be right outside the conference room door. That's the lower table. That's kind of for like a seating group. The umbrellas, which would be spaced out there, are shown below. They wouldn't be using that type of table, but the umbrella would be. Those can fold up and things of that nature, but generally those can be left out and help break up some of the heat that we get there. We'd add one trash can. This is a rectangular version of the 40 by 40 tables that we'd get four of. And then we'd have 16 of these chairs that would go around those tables. And then we would have four more that would be in the seating group that's shown here on the right with the arms. And that's the similar to the one that we have in the lobby. So I'd be glad to entertain any questions the commission has on this.
Thank you, Mike. Is there any other staff or department heads and or the public that wants to speak on this?
Nobody at this time.
Thank you, Barb. All right. Dean, you want to start?
That's fine. I was curious, though, how has the patio been used since it opened? I mean, of course, excepting this year, which was unusual.
A lot of people have brought their own furnishings to it for weddings or receptions or things of that nature. It's been used as an open space. We do have, well, probably just a little bit less than a dozen of year-round chairs that are out on the patio that we inherited from another project. And on a couple of occasions, we've taken tables out from some of our round tables out there, but that's not ideal for them. And those can't stay out in inclement weather, or inclement weather, I should say. But that's been just kind of a more of a short-term thing. Like when my daughter had her wedding reception there, we rented tables and put them out there. We got a number of high top tables that were out there and things of that nature and some folding chairs. So, and people that have had, like, I was up at a graduation celebration this summer after some of the restrictions were lifted, and they brought in, actually they tried to set up a tent up there, and that didn't work out too well.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, Dean. Sally?
Yeah, is everything that's depicted here, with the exception of umbrellas, if they're out there, able to stay out there all winter? I mean, all of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That looks good to me.
You?
Yeah, I like the layout. I do have a few questions and concerns, I guess, about this, though. One, well, Mike, is the balance in the account, the construction fund, still $240,000 or so?
Last I checked, it was $248,000.
So I was just wondering about some of the other things in the building. Where the status of technology, you know, we were looking at a sound system. There's some concerns, or not concerns, but opportunities with the Heritage Center. I'm just wondering if, you know, if this should be the first thing we move forward with, or we have this information now, and if we don't act on it right now, it might go up a little bit, but just to identify the needs that we have, things that haven't been done, and just look at a total package to try to get them done.
That's possible. The PA system for the commission chambers has been acquired, and that's installed, and that's already been paid for out of that fund balance. So that's covered.
The other thing,
the goal of the Heritage Center all along has been to basically they would self fund for their improvements.
Yeah, I understand that there was some amount that was dedicated for the Heritage Center that hadn't been spent, but you know, I don't want to get into that discussion necessarily. One thing about this furniture, though, it's really heavy. And I just wonder, people, like if you have a wedding or a graduation party or something like that, you might want to rearrange it. And they're so heavy that, you know, are people going to drag it and scrape the floor or the flooring there? And that type of thing is one thing, you know, just a practical thing that I kind of thought about. So anyway,
I don't think that'd be an issue with the chairs or the four. The benches would be the heaviest thing that'd be on here. And I think, you know, two people could do it. It'd be heavy, no doubt about it. And they're at the perimeter anyway. Right. The rest of the stuff could be moved fairly easily. But again, it has to be fairly heavy so winds and stuff like that don't start moving it around on its own.
Thank you.
Thanks, you. Rob?
I got a question in regard to the timelines for using the balance that's in the, you know, for the, how would I say it, the millage. That's $248,000. Can that be just left there in perpetuity as the sinking fund or a rainy day fund? Is that the goal, to hold on to that money for a period of time longer than, and can we hold on to it for a period?
Yeah, we checked that again. This money was left over because of, you know, the project came in basically under budget when we funded for it. The money, as I mentioned before, has to be spent on the project. Talking to our financial advisor, there is no timeline with regards to when we have to spend it. You may recall that we did research to see if we could use this money to pay down the debt on the building, and that is not allowable.
Well, we can use it for future maintenance, though.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. Well, it's nice to have a fund like that.
Yeah.
I support the proposal. And
thanks, Ron. I also support the proposal. It's time to do it. So I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we postpone this purchase until we have a plan for the technology, maybe improved office furniture for city employees and that type of thing before we move forward with this.
Okay. Do we have a second? Without a second, that motion will not move forward. Is there any other motions?
I'll make a motion that City Commission approve the purchase of patio and outdoor furnishings from Landscape Forms of Kalamazoo and as a proposed for $35,082 plus shipping for the two additional benches.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Conklin?
No.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Let's move on to item G, airport crack sealing.
Thank you, Mayor. As I noted in my report, the crack sealing of all the city streets and parking lots was completed a little over a week ago. And while the contractor was still in the area, I had him take a look at both the runways, or runway, and the taxiways at the existing city airport for crack sealing. That was a request that came from a member of the airport board to do that evaluation through Mike. So we did that on the 9th of September, and we did get a proposal finally today in writing from him, and it confirmed the verbal amount that he had previously indicated of $9,000 to do the runway and an additional $2,400 to do some of the areas around the airport hangars. So I'd recommend that we go forward and do that work based on the price that was quoted. It seems in line with what was paid last time when everything, including the parking lots, the taxiways, runways, every bit of asphalt out there was sealed back in 2014 for $15,000. So this amount of $9,000 for the runways and $2,400 for the taxiways around the hangars seems to be in line with the cost that we paid last time. There is $25,000 budgeted for airport improvements, and none of that money has been expended year to date. So it fits well within that approved budget amount. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tim. Do we have any other staff or department heads or public?
The runway is probably the largest and most important asset that we have out at the airport. The airport board is fully behind getting the crack sealing done on that. And we included the additional funds up to the $15,000 to handle some additional taxiway work as we found it and went through the project. So I fully support Tim's recommendation. I would still leave it at up to the $15,000 to give us a little bit of headroom in case we find some additional work that we want to have done while they're on site.
Thank you, Mike. Does anybody else want to speak, Barb?
There's no hands up.
Thank you. Sally, it's your turn.
My turn, huh? Well, I think that this is fine. I'm totally for it.
Okay. Hugh?
Mike, are you saying the amount should be more than $15,000?
No, Hugh, I would recommend, even though the numbers that Tim came back with were 11,400, I would say leave it at the 15,000 in the recommendation, just so that if he comes back with something more than what he's seen at this point, that Tim and I have the leeway to move within that, within the 15,000.
Okay, thank you. I'm good.
Thanks, you. Rob?
I support the recommendation.
Dean?
I'm good.
I also support the recommendation. Looking for a motion.
I'll make a motion that the City Commission award a purchase order contract applied pavement markings of Harbor Springs for the amount of $15,000 and recommend the city manager execute the document.
Second.
We have a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Brunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. On to item H, Veterans Park Pavilion Rental Policy and Fees Recommendation. Let's see here. Tim?
Yep. Thank you, Mayor. This is, again, treading some new ground for us as we have recently completed the renovations to the Veterans Pavilion. And now we've got this new asset that looks like it's going to be very desirable for individuals to rent moving forward, which is, I think, what everyone's expectation was when you guys entered into this project a couple of years ago. So, you know, just by way of background, a couple things. We did have a discussion at the Parks and Rec Commission where I got some further input on this proposed policy, and I can talk about that maybe near the end. But there were, what I documented here were 10 different things that we took into consideration when drafting this policy. And first off, I wanted to thank both Kelsey and Jordan from Main Street and the Farmers Market for kind of helping me with the initial draft, and then a number of other staff that helped in review of that draft as we kind of moved it forward to the Parks and Rec Commission and now before you. But when we looked at drafting this policy, we looked at these 10 things. One was the uniqueness of the pavilion that, you know, it's both an outdoor and an indoor design. It's got a commercial kitchen. There's a lot of logistics with just kind of functionally operating this thing now that it's a different animal than it was in the past. I think that, you know, we're all on the same page that we want this as an interim policy to kind of guide us over the next 12 months and then come back to the City Commission probably with a revised policy to reflect really how we want to operate. So we'll kind of test this out over the next 12 months and then tweak it about a year from now. A couple of the things we kind of ran through the list of questions on were, you know, should the newly added shelters at the east end of the pavilion be included when someone books a facility rental or not? In the end, we decided or were recommending that they not be, except by maybe special circumstance for, you know, the big events like Mushroom Festival and whatnot. But we would want a space for people to still have a picnic, even though there might be, say, a wedding reception going on in the main part of the shelter during the summer. We asked whether the commercial kitchen should have a separate rental fee or not. And we came back with, we're recommending that it does have a separate fee. We asked, you know, how do you want to structure the rental fee? How should that be done? You know, should it be a flat fee per block of time, like X number of dollars per hour, Should there be a fixed fee plus a variable rate fee structure? Should we require a deposit? Should there be discounts to nonprofits or not? You know, these are all questions that kind of came up while we were having this discussion. We also looked at whether non-residents should pay a higher rental fee or not, like a lot of other communities do, and our recommendation is that they do. We asked ourselves, you know, should the fee be less during the non-peak weekday rentals or not? At this time, we're just recommending a flat fee. That might be a tweak that comes with time as we learn how people rent it and what the demands really are going to look like during the weekday versus the weekend. We talked about how we would coordinate operations with the farmers market as they move indoors come mid-October, and what impact is that going to have on how the site is set up, where the picnic tables are stored, how the building physically gets used during the market and when the market is done. Looked at, you know, what do other communities charge for similar facility rentals? And that is a bit of a challenge because this is a pretty unique facility, as I mentioned in the first point. And then the last thing that we looked at were what I call the 407 operational issues that we have to resolve going forward with having a new facility, dealing with occupancy, hours of operation, staffing, cleaning, disinfection, controlling the heat, garbage, snow removal, banners, decorations. You know, I can go on for 15 minutes on the number of things that we have to kind of think about as we move forward with this new facility. So those all helped us form the basis for this written policy. And by way of some additional background, I had Pat run what the revenues were last year, and I'm talking 2019, kind of the non-COVID year of rentals, our last and best year. And we took in $1,900 worth of revenue during 2019 versus a budget of $3,500. I would note that we did close it early in 2019 in order to start the construction a little bit after Labor Day, but that figure of 1,900 represented 52 reservations during the calendar year. If the commission moves forward with the revenues I'm recommending or the fees that I'm recommending, I'm projecting that the revenue would probably be on the order of about $6,800 next year, assuming it's a non-COVID regular kind of outdoor gathering type of year. Last few points before I guess we turn it over to discussion would be that the Parks and Rec Commission was supportive of the policy. There was a fair bit of dialogue about it. I wouldn't say that there was unanimous view on everything. Hugh may wish to chime in on this as well because he attended the meeting. But I think one of the points of discussion we had at Parks and Rec was whether to charge the nonprofits or not, because the city has had a past practice of not charging the nonprofits for use of the facilities. And I'm recommending that we actually start charging them, but only charge them half the fee that's being proposed in the policy. The other things regarding fees, the current fee by way of comparison is $100 to rent the pavilion. There's no security deposit associated with that fee. And what I propose is we look to do a cost of service study after a year or possibly after 2 years of operation so that we can see, you know, what is it actually costing us in utilities and cleaning and other expenses for operating that facility so we can get a better handle on aligning the actual fees with the cost of service of the operation. So that's just some background in terms of how we came up with or how I came up with the final recommended policy. And unless you wanted me to run through all the points in this policy, I guess we could open it up for questions.
Thank you, Tim. Is there any other staff, department heads, and or the public that wants to weigh in on this?
No hands raised at this time.
Mike, or not? Okay.
No, I was gonna add. Obviously, we have a great new asset here. It is going to be a lot more expensive to operate than the old one. We don't know what a lot of those costs are yet, especially with regards to utilities. So, an interim policy while we build up a year's worth of history on utilities and other costs, which we're going to track separately, I think would be helpful with regards to this as well. It was the original concept when this was being built that the shelters on the east side would basically be available on a first come first serve basis, except for major events like 4th of July or the Mushroom Festival or something like that, where they're basically taking over where the event's taking over the entire park, just so that multiple users could use the pavilion, which is why we designed it the way it was, with bathrooms on the outside. So if somebody had the main floor reserved, there was a way to use restrooms without having to go through somebody's function or not be able to use them as well too. With regards to the non-resident rate, the only thing that I would remind the city commission of I think Cindy or Kelsey can correct me if I'm wrong, or Barb as well. I think we received a sizable donation from one of our neighboring townships, Evangeline Township, towards this project. And I think it was in an amount of like $10,000. So I don't know if there's any consideration we'd want to give to their residents for a limited period of time with regards to the rental rates, where either that they're at the city rate for a period of up to 5 years, or that they have a lesser type of an increase with regards to it. So overall, I'm in full support with regards to the recommendation.
Thank you, Mike. Anybody else out there, Barb?
No, there's no other hands up.
Okay. Hugh, let's go to you first, and plus you're on the Parks and Rec Committee, so the floor is yours.
Yeah, the Parks and Rec Commission really appreciated Tim and all that he did and the thoroughness of what is contained here. I'm one of those that I think Tim maybe referenced it, that I don't think we should be charging nonprofits. Most of them are raising money to invest back into the community, and just on a philosophical bent, I don't agree with that or support that. But Tim, I wanted to go back to your numbers. You said that there were 52 reservations in 2019 and it raised $1,900. So would that mean then that that the majority of people who make a reservation are nonprofits?
Yeah, it's about 50-50 roughly, Hugh. Based on the tabulation that Pat put together, there were 6 major events that were not charged. 19 nonprofits held events in addition to that. You know, things like the Garden Clubs, Boy Scouts, Raven Hill Discovery Center, et cetera. And then there were 27 more kind of in the venue of private events that were held. And of those 27 events, some were full day where they paid the $100. A half day rental was $50. So that's where the $1,900 in revenue came from.
Well, might a compromise be that we not charge nonprofits based in Boyne City?
Could be.
Anyway, I support this policy, and you know, have it see where it is after next summer, and we can evaluate where it is. But I really do think we need to give some serious thought about charging nonprofits. Thank you.
Thanks, you. Ryan?
Well, I'm kind of in the same camp as you in regards to the charging a nonprofit, but I think I could see some need for some language that nonprofits, to exempt them, the ones that serve Boyne City, because you look at these national organizations, that's totally a different animal. But the other, and the rates seem reasonable to me, in regards to, in fact, they seem very reasonable based on what the experience we've had at the senior center with rentals. And it's, you got a $700,000 or $800,000 asset sitting there, for use for $100 is pretty reasonable, more than reasonable. So anyways, I'd like to see some language in there where nonprofits that, are from Boyne City and serve Boyne City be exempted. But I'm good with all the rest of it.
Thanks, Ron. Dean?
Yeah, similarly, I have some discomfort with some aspects of this. Certainly, I don't think we should charge nonprofits, just period, because we don't do that in other facilities, number one, and number two. And we benefit so much from the work of nonprofits, where they're directly based in Boyne City or kind of serve this general area, that us allowing use of our facilities free of charge for them to have meetings or do what they do or fundraisers is just a way of being able to support their activity. So I think it'd be a step backwards for us to charge nonprofits for the use of this or any other city facilities. The second thing I sort of worry about is, these are substantially higher fees than were charged before. And I think about, if I wanted to just have a 2-hour birthday party for about 2,000 people in the middle of the afternoon, instead of paying $50, I'd have to pay now with a new one, $150 for a relatively small activity. And I think that would push away, use of those kind of small public or private gatherings. And I'm sort of wondering if that, how well that serves us to do that. I don't really have a good, alternative for what's being presented here, other than I got a feeling, especially in the afternoon evening rate, for $150 cause some folks to have to use something else just because they can't justify that kind of expenditure. I do think, and I think you sort of alluded to it, that the fees that we charge should have some relationship to the cost of operation. And we don't really know the cost of operation just yet, other than we could fully expect, certainly makes sense, it'll be more. So I think we need to keep that in mind. The only other question I had, this is a question more than a comment, is one of the original intents of the kitchen, and the reason we invested in making it a commercial kitchen, was to provide a food entrepreneur as an opportunity to do some value-added, make a value-added product that they might not normally be able to in our kitchen, and use that as a venue for testing it out or some other purpose. And I wonder if there was any discussion about that goal and how we might structure a charge for that specific service.
There was. That was definitely one of the main points that Kelsey and Jordan and I discussed. The thinking is that the city would charge the farmers market a nominal fee. It would probably be an annual fee for use of the facility, and that would include the kitchen. And then the farmers market would figure out how to best kind of allocate the kitchen use amongst the various vendors, including potential kind of incubators, if you will, to try the kitchen out. They would figure out those details so that it would really basically just be kind of handled through the farmers market. If somebody wanted to just try the kitchen out kind of outside of the vendors for the farmers market, and that's really what I was referring to, then they would apply just like anybody else would to use the kitchen, and they would only have to pay the $100 fee plus the deposit for use of the kitchen that night or that afternoon if they wanted to just kind of check it out. So that was the discussions that we had with Kelsey and Jordan and I. Kelsey may wish to weigh in on that a little bit further. And Dean, I think I could go back to your question about, you know, the 2 or 3 hour rental. The way that I proposed the rates were based kind of on looking at what and how some of the other communities charge, including the city of Petoskey, who had some pretty good information on its website about charges. And, you know, for comparison's sake, they'll rent you a shelter that has a 75 person capacity for $125 for a 3 hour period. So that's about half the amount of time that we give them with a morning slot and, you know, a little bit and significantly less than what they would get in an afternoon evening slot if they chose to rent from the city of Boyne. So they break all their facilities down into 3 3-hour blocks, and they generally end the operation fairly early. I think dusk is the latest that you can rent one of their pavilion facilities. So it was really kind of looking at a comparison of what some of the others are charging and whether or not we've got an equivalent facility or not.
Thank you.
And a little bit about the food, if that's okay.
Yes, Kelsey.
So we did talk about, there's the kind of two separate categories with if, you know, you're a food entrepreneur tied to the farmers market or not. The ones tied to the farmers market seem like probably the lowest hanging fruit for engaging in activities like that, or we know that some already are engaged in activities like that and are interested in using the kitchen. Within the farmers market realm, there's a few different options that have kind of already come up as the ones we see happening most often. It would be cooking food to sample at the market during market hours, cooking food to sell at the market, and then cooking food for selling at the market, or maybe they even want to go further for packaging and things like that for selling wherever. And so we're working with the vendors on that now, but they would basically work just with the farmers market, and you know, it would be, that would affect the hours of when they're using it and things like that. The options I know that people are really jumping at right now is to cook to serve at the market, whether that, well, samples are kind of off the table right now, but you know, to someone that sells meat to cook a burger, or fish to cook a fish sandwich, or whatever it might be. So that's definitely something that people are already interested in and we're working through.
Great, thanks, that's really helpful. Sounds like a good approach to me.
It's exciting, the vendors are really excited about it. It's good, really good.
Thanks, Kelsey. Sally.
Yeah, it's, I'm good with it, just like it is.
Okay. I appreciate all the input that's been put in by the different committees. I am in support, and I like the idea we reanalyze this in a year. When you define a nonprofit, that's where I'm a little, does that include churches? Does that include schools? Does that include a Boy Scout troop or a Cub Scout troop? And when you say just serving Boyne City, a lot of our service groups, the Rotary and Lions and so forth, I would assume have members from Walloon Lake and Horton Bay and Boyne Falls. So I guess I'm just trying to define what a nonprofit is or what a local nonprofit is. But I can leave that discussion up to the Parks and Rec Committee. Just food for thought.
Tom?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to kind of jump in on that similar point as well, too, because nonprofit's kind of a broad term with regards to that. Part of my mind's thinking, are we thinking nonprofits or are we thinking community service groups? And there may be a difference between the two. I think churches that you brought up is a good example, because we do have one church group that's using that on a regular basis. And I think there also needs to be some type of an equity. I wouldn't want any one group to dominate the use of the pavilion, that they come in and they book all the weekends or they book all the Sundays or something of that nature, especially if it's nonprofit at no charge. Because that's, I don't know if that's fair to the rest of the community as well. So, I mean, like Lions have been booking there for Wednesdays, but if somebody else came in there and wanted a Wednesday afternoon, I think they should have the ability to go in there too, and Lions should say, okay, well, we've had our fair share and move over, let somebody else in it. There has to be a balance, especially with the nonprofits and things like that, so we just don't have somebody come in and dominate it as well too.
Tom?
Yes, Sally.
I think especially with nonprofits, I agree with Dean actually. To say it's got to be within the city or not that's the purpose of nonprofits going beyond the city borders, I think. So if we're gonna have it for nonprofits, it should be any nonprofit.
Well, that was kind of one of the compromises that Hugh is suggesting as well too, that nonprofits that were based in Boyne City, and all the major service clubs, I think, pretty much are. Even though they do have members and they do provide services outside the city as well too. They're pretty, Lions, Rotary, Kiwanis, Edenu, some of those groups, they're all, the Garden Club, they're all based in Boyne City as far as I know.
Mike, if it helps, I just took a look through the list that Pat gave me, and of the 19 entities that were kind of listed as nonprofits, I only see one that is technically not within the city of Boyne City, and that would be the Raven Hill Discovery Center. All the other ones are Boyne City based or have, some kind of operation here in Boyne City.
This is Barb. Can I jump in for just a moment?
Please, Barb.
When we talk about nonprofit here at City Hall, we basically kind of drew the line that they had to be a 501c3 for a nonprofit status, because we have had requests from, say, like the Boyne City Yacht Club. They're not necessarily a for-profit organization. They're not really necessarily a service group. So we drew the line at 501c3 status. And that's what we've done in the past. That doesn't mean that that's how it has to be viewed with the adoption of this or in the future, but that's what we've done in the past.
So I got a question related to that. The Friends of the Boyne River, when they have their annual, board meeting, and they have it upstairs, did they pay for that service, for that rental of the commission chambers?
I don't believe so. I believe that they have a 501c3 status.
They do have a 501c3. So my point was, if they have to pay for the chamber and get the pavilion free, but it sounds like they're both free. So, okay.
Tom, you raise a good point. So, Barb, do 501c3 organizations get to use City Hall at no charge, the public areas?
To the best of my knowledge, we currently do not charge them.
Yeah, that's included in the fee schedule on page 12 of your budget, Hugh, with regards to public City Hall meeting room fees. And that's under fourth priority. And basically it says public groups, which are defined as groups of citizens meeting regarding matters of concern to the entire community, open to the entire community. Examples are the Chamber of Commerce, Junior Chamber of Commerce, conservation group, seniors, et cetera. There'll be no charge for public groups.
I'm wondering, you know, along that line, would it make more sense to treat the pavilion like we do the rest of the city facilities and use that same policy, which I think has been working out for certainly the city facilities, leaving enough flexibility to balance those priorities?
I kind of agree, Dean. There'd be a consistency. They're both fantastic facilities, and I guess they would warrant the same fee structure. Just my thought.
Yeah, I did.
Barb, can I jump in one more time?
Please, Barb.
I know that there's been discussion here amongst the staff at City Hall in talking about nonprofits and the types of use, because there is a big difference between, say, for example, Friends of the Boyne River having a meeting with 5 to 15 people here in one of our rooms versus a full-out Christmas party. I mean, there's a difference in the amount of trash and cleaning and so on and so forth. And, you know, so I noticed that that's not in this structure, and I know that that might be difficult to manage, but it has come up in discussion here.
Good point.
Mayor, if I could add to that, under the pavilion reservation section of the policy, it's up there on the screen right now, the last bullet point there, it says, use by the City of Boyne City or a public group will receive the first priority for the fee structure outlined in the city budget document. That was kind of my attempt to try to tie it to the budget document that Mike had referenced. You know, beyond the fees, I think we can follow that general policy regarding priorities of who gets first, second, third, fourth, and fifth priority by just tweaking the wording on this a little bit.
Another food for thought for a comparison basis might be the meeting rooms over at the library with regards to some of their policies, especially their community room at the lower level. I believe they make that free for public service groups as well, too. And I know some of them, you know, like Lions meets there on had met there on a regular basis. And, you know, sometimes they generate a fair amount of trash as well, too, because they have their luncheons there. But I don't think the library charges any fee on that. Some of the service clubs do make a donation to the library just out of, hey, it's a sense of fairness.
So can we move forward by approving this, except for the nonprofit fee, and revisit it at a later meeting?
Or you could just make a motion that would address nonprofits, either yay or nay.
Yeah, it's just that Barb and Mike have raised some, you know, interesting points here that. Maybe some things need to be a little more clearly defined.
Well, again, I also would remind the commission that this is an interim policy. Whether we review it in 6 months or a year or whatever, we know that we're going to learn some things as we go through this and probably want to come back and tweak it. So don't worry about having it perfect right now. If something comes up in the meantime, even before 6 months or a year or whatever, that we think warrants further discussion, we'd bring it right back.
I think I'd be comfortable with this if we did not have the nonprofit fee for the moment, but utilize, as was stated here, the current policy and fee structure, the current nonprofit policy as outlined in the, and priorities as outlined in the fee structure document.
Are you making that a motion, Dean?
Is that a motion, Dean?
Sure. not artfully said, but it's a motion.
I'll second.
I knew what you meant.
You second?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Tim, are you good with that? And Barb, do you think that can be operated okay, efficiently by staff?
Sure. It's more clear than what we have currently.
It's a step in the right direction then.
Tim, you're okay with this motion?
Yeah, you have a thumbs up.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
All right. Let's move on to item I, which was in the consent agenda, which is approval of the purchase order contract with Robinson's Landscaping and Nursery. Hugh, I'll just turn that over to you.
Thank you. Kim, I just have a few questions. I'll give them to you all at once here, if that's okay.
Sure.
One, how many trees have been removed? How is it determined where we plant trees? Will there be water bags on the new trees? And if I figured it correctly, with the grants and that type of thing, we actually have maybe $3,800 or so dollars that we could spend for additional trees. And I was just wondering if that number's correct and why we don't utilize all the money to plant more trees.
James Manco.
Yes. Yep. So how many trees were removed? There were 44 trees under the original contract that were removed. There were three additional trees that had to be removed that were emergencies, that were all very sizable trees as a result of the windstorms in, that would have been actually August windstorms. So we're at 47 as it stands right now. I think they have a couple trees yet to complete on the removals, and then they have about six locations where we plan to do tree trimming. So I have a meeting tentatively scheduled tomorrow with the contractor to go over exactly where we're at on the project. The where do we plant? That's based on two things. One, where the residents ask that we put replacement trees in the boulevard area, because this is funded from roads or from the streets budget. That's the primary location. And then, you know, sometimes the city also has some locations that they'd like to see additional street trees planted. That is in the general sense of where we plant. Physically, where each tree goes then gets determined after I stake it, after Miss Dig does the locates, which in this case Robinson Landscaping would call in the locates, and then in the field we have to physically determine where the tree goes, because we can't set the tree over top of the water service line if there's a shallow buried electric utility or cable or some other utility in the area. We'll have to kind of physically move these locations around, so that does become a bit of an operational challenge. In reference to the question on tree bags, yes, the bags have already been bought, and everybody that gets a tree is going to get a bag with their tree this year and some instructions on how to fill it. And I've been actually working a little bit with Gao on how we actually accomplish that. He's offered his assistance to kind of help me in that regard. And then here you are correct. There is a little bit left over when you do the math because of the grant, but I do think we're going to be a little bit over on the tree trimming and removal because of the three large trees that we had to remove that were emergencies earlier this summer. So I had mentioned to Mike, because Mike Kane had brought up the same question, you know, could we do a few more potentially? And that's a maybe, depending on how the math shakes out on the extra trees.
Thank you.
Yep.
Is there any other discussion from commissioners? Questions? Is there any other discussion from department heads or the public?
There are no hands up.
Okay.
I would make the motion to approve a purchase order contract with Robinson Landscaping and Nursery to plant 63 trees or more if possible in an amount not to exceed $24,855 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. I guess I contradicted myself there. So to plant 63 trees.
Okay.
And any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Brunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to good of the order. Ron, you have anything?
I had a question. Is Kelsey still there?
I'm here.
Has there been any change as far as the theater goes, as far as creating a 501c3, or is there a group put together that's helping you manage the outline and the future use of it?
Yeah, so right now there's a subcommittee of the Main Street Board that's really just in the research phase, talking to other theaters, looking at, the different structures, things like that, to really get our plan in order. So a lot of kind of, background information being done.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Dean?
I'm good.
Okay. Sally?
Good.
Hugh?
I'm good.
I would just like to compliment staff and especially Tim. Tim, you had a lot on the agenda today, and it proves that you're taking care of business, and we appreciate it. So, job well done. Under announcements, the city goals update meeting is scheduled for October 6th at 1:00. And the next regular city commission meeting is scheduled for October 13th. At 7 p.m., I guess I do need to bring up one more thing under good of the order, Mike. So we have the MML convention. Are we signed up as a city?
We will be.
Okay. And also the housing summit, same opportunity that we can sign up more than one, I would think, maybe.
We've had a number of people that have expressed an interest, have told me one way or the other about whether they're interested in the housing summit or not. And I'm trying to remember, I think that's later on this week that the rate changes on it. So I think Jane and I were going to get back together with that on Thursday. For some reason I'm thinking it's Friday, but she has that noted down. So if anybody hasn't contacted us to let us know, please do. The housing summit, unlike the MML, is a charge per person.
Oh, okay. And thirdly, Kelsey, in the notes I read today, wanted us to react to whether we wanted to be involved when they announced the winners for Main Street. So a reminder to get to Kelsey. Count me in, Kelsey, please.
Awesome. Thanks.
Anything else?
I have something. Mike, will the meeting on the 6th be in person?
I guess that's a group discussion. Tell me what you want to do.
I would prefer it being in person.
I would too, depending on how many people. Is it just us? I mean, it's open to the public, but is it us and department heads, or is it just us, Mike?
Well, I would assume we'd want some of the department heads there.
Sure.
So I don't think, I mean, if we're going to have the meeting there, you know, we'd have to have it in the commission chambers and set the commission chambers up in such a way that it'd have to be socially distanced and things of that nature.
Now, if it's a nice day, would it be possible to do it in the pavilion?
Yes.
It'd be the same thing, social distancing.
Yeah, I'll check the availability on the pavilion. We could book that up as a possible location too. Unless the only issue that we have sometimes in the pavilion is, especially if we're going to have to be socially distant, and you may recall this from when we had some of the goal-setting public sessions, it's a little hard to hear. So,
especially if there's 30-knot winds.
Yeah. And the PA system we got is not really that portable.
We'll be done in about 5 minutes.
Ron or Sally, you want to weigh in on what you would prefer that day?
I guess I'm okay with live. I'm not sure that it wouldn't be better to just have it in the city hall, and you don't have to worry about what the weather conditions are going to be, unless we can quickly move it from one to the other.
Ron?
I'm okay with the meeting.
Now, is the state regulation only 10 people yet, or is it different than that?
I'm trying to weed my way through that. I mean, everything was locked down in northern Michigan to 10, then supposedly it went up to 250. I'm looking for her latest orders. I'm not finding any new orders to, you know, balance off her change from 10. So,
But the headlines of the Petoskey News Review on Tuesday said that that has been lifted to 250, and I was looking for it too, and I didn't see any change in executive orders. So
I've looked at it a couple times and haven't found it. Maybe I'm just missing it.
Well, it was baffling how they came out with that headline.
It was 250 or 25% capacity, whichever was the lower number.
Yeah, but I'm trying to find out where that's based off of.
Yep. I'll look and see it because I do remember reading that, but again, I don't know if that was a press release or if it was actually an order because I did go digging for it. So I'll look as well.
I can say what we're seeing in the Main Street stuff, if that's helpful.
Sure.
If it's just 10, then maybe we'd be better off doing it via Zoom because I'm not sure that we could keep it under 10 if we had any from the public and if we wanted to have department heads join us.
Yeah, that's probably wise, Dean.
I was just going to suggest is what I'm hearing from the commission is if we can have it inside and have it live, let's do it. And we'll sweat the details behind the scene with regards to the numbers and the location. I mean, I don't think we have to work this out by committee unless we really want to continue to discuss it. And if Kelsey has an answer for where we're not finding this stuff, I'd say chime in, Kelsey.
I gave it to Patrick.
What I've seen in the Main Street listservs is the executive orders technically still say 10. Apparently, there was some FAQ page or something that was updated to clarify that Northern Michigan was moved to 250, but there wasn't an executive order to follow that is the latest that I'm hearing. It also seems like it changes every minute. So
that's the whole thing.
So with that being said, we'll go with Mike's recommendation that the staff figures it out. We'll go from there.
Yeah. With the preference being live, if at all possible.
Yes.
In person, I should say. We'll all be live.
Okay, so I think we went back to good of the order, which is good. We covered some topics. I think we're all set. It is 2:34, and at this time, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.